You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In Susan Cheever's new biography of Louisa May Alcott, she reveals that the author of Little Women never wanted to write a book for girls. Ms. Cheever tells the surprising story of Alcott's life and how she came to write the novel that made her famous in Louisa May Alcott, a personal biography. It's published by Simon & Schuster. I'm very pleased that it brings Susan Cheever back to our show. Hi.
Hi.
So why did you decide to write a biography of Alcott and one that has as a subtitle a personal biography? Is it the personal side?
Well, certainly it's the personal side of Louisa May Alcott. There's so many reasons why I decided to write this book. One is that I'm obsessed with Louisa May Alcott, so that's that. The other is that it seemed to me as I read more and more about her that in both her life and her work, she embodies these questions that women have to answer for themselves about love and money and how they're going to balance those things. You know, are you going to marry the Laurie guy from Little Women who you don't really love but who has a ton of money? Or are you going to marry the much older guy who you do really love but never has any money and try to make the money for yourself? Or how are you going to handle this business of the domestic versus the professional? And I felt as though I just completely identified with this struggle, especially as a writer. Let me just give you a third reason. I can tell that I'm going on too long.
No, I can wait. You just saw my lips move. That's all.
I did. The third reason is I just had so much identification with her struggles and with everything that she went through. And I felt that in studying her life and in writing about her life, I came to some kind of peace with a lot of things for myself that I hadn't really been at peace with. And her trajectory as a writer is one of the most fascinating writerly trajectories that I know of.
Well, what I was going to say earlier was that in some ways she's like Jane Austen in that she wrote about those issues that were important to women. But men read Jane Austen and love Jane Austen. I hardly know a man who read Little Women at least at the time that all those girls were reading that book.
Well, another reason that I wrote this book is that I was asked to write an introduction in 1999 for Little Women, and I reread Little Women, which I suggest you do, and it's a superb novel.
In my case, it would be read it for the first time.
Okay. It's a superb novel. I mean, I had no idea. I thought, you know, I had read it when I was 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. I thought it was like Nancy Drew. Not at all. It's a superb novel. She was a superb and important writer. She had a huge influence on Henry James. She had a measurable influence on all the men around her, Emerson, Thoreau, all, you know, there was a tremendous interaction between those people, but Henry James especially. And people don't know that. She's trivialized. And she's trivialized, alas, because she's a woman and because she wrote for young girls. And you're right. Men have never heard of her.
No, we've heard of her. And we've seen
barely,
the movie, maybe.
Barely. And I am an American studies major. And I did graduate work in American studies at creditable institutions, and I had no idea that Louisa May Alcott was part of that transcendental circle.
Well, you write that at first she resisted writing this book. Why didn't she want to do it? Did she see herself as a writer of adult novels?
Well, she, I think, realized that she would be trivialized if she wrote a book for young women. She felt that she had been a Civil War nurse. She had written a wonderful book about the Civil War called Hospital Sketches, which is also not taught or widely read, even though it's one of the very few chronicles of nursing in the Civil War.
She wrote a novel called Moods.
She wrote a novel called Moods, which she felt was a serious novel.
Is it any good?
I didn't like it. Henry James didn't like it. But Henry James, interestingly enough, said in his very bad review of it, "We are utterly weary of novels about precocious little girls." And he went on to write five of those. So, you know, I think his distaste for Moods was very, very much wiped out by his absorption of Little Women and of her later work after Little Women. You know, you can see in her life that she didn't really find her mature writing voice until she was a Civil War nurse. And Hospital Sketches is a very different voice than Moods or any of her previous work.
But it's interesting that she was only a Civil War nurse for a brief time, and yet it changed her life.
4 weeks can change your life, especially if you're nigh on Fredericksburg, you know. I mean, I think the Civil War changed many people's lives in a couple days.
Most people assume that Little Women is autobiographical. The March family is based on her own family, and that Jo is really Louisa. How accurate is that assumption?
Well, I don't think that's true at all. She wrote Little Women at Orchard House in Concord, Massachusetts, and she said it at Orchard House in Concord, Massachusetts. But in fact, her teenage years did not happen in Orchard House. They happened, oddly enough, at another house down the street. I think that in Little Women, she wrote about the family that she yearned to have. And I think that yearning is often one of the ingredients of great literature. She invented a domestic, Hannah, to do the work that she, Louisa, had to do. She made the father disappear. He's just never there in Little Women. He was such a difficult character for her.
Her father was a larger-than-life figure.
A larger-than-life, very difficult man. Wonderful, brilliant, but difficult. She also made the Jo March character very, very beloved in spite of her rebellion, whereas Louisa herself had been punished for her rebellion and constantly told not to be so rebellious.
But they were also an eccentric family, the family was always moving, including a stint at a utopian community called Fruitlands, where
interesting name. Hard to believe he named it that.
And it was the leader was one of those commune leaders who believed in free love, the sort of thing that we saw then and then we saw again in the 60s.
Well, that's contested. The leader of Fruitlands was Bronson Alcott, Louisa's father. Mm. And Fruitlands was a utopian community that he started and that for a great deal of its time, and it only lasted 6 months, its principal adherents were his own family. Mm. Other people came and went, but most of them tended to go when the weather got cold. The free love thing, it's interesting. One of the things I was able to do in this biography is step back and talk about other biographies. And each biographer has a different idea about what was really going on.
Well, it was financed by Charles Lane, an Englishman who is the man who was the advocate for that. And,
Really. Charles Lane believed that the family shouldn't be too important. Whether or not he wanted to sleep with Bronson Alcott or Abba Alcott, or whether or not Bronson wanted to sleep with everybody else, nobody knows. Everybody has a guess. So what I do in the book is I just say to the reader, here's the evidence, here's what everybody else says, and leave it there, because I don't want to be announcing something that I'm not sure is true.
Susan Cheever's latest book is called Louisa May Alcott, A Personal Biography. It's published by Simon & Schuster. Well, the family lived in poverty and depended on friends and other family members to get by. And Louisa seems to have taken it upon herself to be the main financial support of the family. After the success of Little Women, did she feel trapped or did she feel liberated?
I believe she felt liberated. Or let me put that a better way. She felt both. I think she
wrote other books about the March
family. She wrote
family.
Many, many other books, some good, some not as good. Little Men is a very good book. I think everybody who's a successful writer feels both trapped and liberated, frankly. It's a wonderful thing to have a voice in this world, and I think she was deeply gratified by the fact that people listened to what she had to say and wrote her letters. On the other hand, having people hide in the bushes outside your house and wait until you come out to mow the lawn isn't fun. So I think she felt, and she also certainly felt as the financial support of the family, which delighted her to be able to do that, she also felt constantly trapped. Yes, both.
Had she become a writer to make money? Because there weren't all that many employment opportunities open to women at the time.
She became a writer to make money. You can see in her account books, she was a seamstress, a teacher, a governess, and a writer. And very, very slowly over the years, the money from writing gets bigger than the money from being a seamstress or a governess, but not by much. She sold many of her early stories under a pseudonym. She was ashamed of them. To Frank Leslie's Illustrated News Weekly, they were what she called blood and thunder stories, melodramatic stories that she wrote only for money.
I love titles like Pauline's Passion
yes.
and Punishment.
That's actually the best one.
You've read them all?
Yes.
Debbie's Debut?
Yes. Yes. And many of them end with everybody jumping off a cliff or dying in a shipwreck. Or they're very melodramatic.
But you say she found her voice at a certain point.
She found her voice.
This is something that every writer thinks about.
It is something every writer thinks about. And another thing that every writer thinks about is, under what circumstances am I going to do my best work? And it seems to me, alas, that very often the circumstances under which people do their best work are that they're depressed, they don't want to do it, and they have nothing left to lose. And at that point, they sit down and reluctantly, angrily write their best work. I wish it weren't so.
She never married. Was that by choice?
That was certainly by choice. As she said, Liberty is a better husband than any man. She was very clear about what she would have to give up to marry and that she didn't want to give it up. She also refused to have Jo March marry Lori in Little Women. She got hundreds of letters from people begging her to let Jo marry Lori, and she just went, no, absolutely not.
Of course, women do get married and still have careers. Would that not have been possible for her?
Well, it would have been possible for her, as it's possible for me, as it's possible for many of us. But even when that's possible, you're constantly making painful choices. And I'm not saying that men don't have painful choices to make, but these are the painful choices that even if you have a career, you leave your crying baby with a fever to go to the office. You know, it's, as every woman can tell you, difficult.
You mentioned the influence of the Transcendentalists. Ralph Waldo Emerson was a neighbor.
Yes.
Also helped out the family when money was tough. And Henry David Thoreau was one of her teachers. Did he have a strong influence on her?
He had a strong influence on her. Emerson had a very strong influence on her. She used Emerson's library starting when she was about 10. As soon as she could read, she had a terrific crush on Emerson, which, of course, from a literary point of view, was a very good thing to have. He gave her all kinds of books, even books about 15-year-old women in love with older men. And
to encourage it a bit, do you think?
I think so. I think Emerson was flattered. You know, she was a very smart girl. But yes, one of the gifts that Bronson Alcott gave her, and he did give her many gifts, was this community in which she grew up of extremely smart intellectual men. And men who also believed, let me say, and this was very unusual at the time, that children were important. In other words, mostly in the 1850s, people thought children were little vipers who just had to be civilized before we could deal with them. But Bronson Alcott and the Transcendentalists believed, as Wordsworth had written, that children were angels who came from heaven and who slowly got worse as they got more civilized. So not only were these men brilliant and intellectual and wonderful writers, but they cared about children and they were willing to talk to a child like Louisa May Alcott.
She died very young, 55, just yes. 2 days after her father's death.
Yes.
Do we know what killed her?
Well, she was very, very sick after the Civil War. When she got sick in the Union Hotel Hospital, they gave her huge doses of mercury, which is what doctors did in those days.
That'll kill you.
And that'll kill you. And, you know, whether or not the mercury killed her, we don't know. There's a whole cottage industry of doctors guessing and imagining what might have killed her. Some people think it was lupus. Some people think it was this. Some people think it was that. I'm a context freak. I don't believe that it's useful to diagnose her as, say, manic depressive or having an autoimmune disease at this point. So we don't know what killed her. She thought it was the mercury. It was a brain aneurysm. And she never was well. After 1864, she was never healthy again.
A few years ago, you wrote American Bloomsbury about the circle of writers in Concord, Mass. In the mid-19th century, which included Emerson, Thoreau, Hawthorne, and later Alcott. And I'm assuming that one also led
Absolutely.
You to this. Are you finished with that group?
Oh, I hope not. I'll never be finished with that group, although my next book won't be about that group. But that group lives very vividly in my imagination, and I love going back to Concord and sort of hanging out with the ghosts of that group and reading that group. So they mean so much to me, especially since they were our first group of professional writers in this country, and they didn't drink and they didn't womanize. They're a model for writing that I certainly would like to follow. No, I'm not done with that group.
And Emerson turns out to be one of the most brilliant thinkers of not just that time, but
thinker,
all American history.
An amazing writer and an amazing accountant. Financially, what he did was astonishing. He took a little inheritance and created a literary community, the like of which we haven't seen before or since.
Susan Cheever's latest book is Louisa May Alcott, A Personal Biography. It is published by Simon & Schuster. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you.